And now we are live on the internet. I'm just stick out a wee tweet to say that's happening. And say good evening, ladies and gentlemen, if you are listening live. This is John Johnson on Radio Edutalk. And I'm really pleased tonight to have some more input about the ALT conference of the Association of Learning Technology, which is going on in Liverpool. The 5th to 7th of September, not December, so next week really, we've got people to talk again, and I'm joined tonight again by Dr Mirren Deepwell, who is the Chief Executive of ALT. Good evening, Mirren.
Hi John,
and
good evening.
We've got Pete Alston, who is the conference co-chair this year, and we've also got Martin Hoxie, who is Innovations, Community and Technology Officer at ALT and is involved in a lot of the, I guess, wires and bells and whistles that go on behind the conference. So good evening, folks.
Good evening, John.
I hope you can hear me, because I can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I like to have a technical glitch early on in the proceedings.
That's what you just said beforehand. You were going to do that to make everything working.
Yeah.
usually it's my job to trip over the wires.
See, regular listeners will know this is not. There's only about six buttons in this, but it's maybe five too many for me. Anyway, good evening, folks. If you're listening live and you want to say hello or ask a question of the guest tonight, please stick a tweet out at with the hashtag Edutalk or at Edutalker, Edutalkr, and we'll try and pick it up and answer it. And last week we got folk to introduce who they were, and if we could just maybe go around the table here and hear just a short elevator pitch of who you are and what you do. Could we start with you, Mirren?
Sure, yes, I'm glad to be here again. So I'm Mirren Deepwell, I'm ALT CEO, and for the conference, I look after a bit of everything, including the programme. So I've been working with Pete and his excellent committee for the last 18 months.
Brilliant. And Pete?
Hi everyone. So my name is Pete Alston. I am, my role now, I've just changed jobs not long ago. I'm now a Director for Learning Solutions at Laureate Online Education. And part of that role sees me working closely with, still with the University of Liverpool, which is where I used to work. 3 weeks ago I left, but I work with the team around the online postgraduate programmes that the university offers across the institution. And I've still managed to kind of keep my honorary title within Liverpool as well, so I'm still very much linked with the university, and as I said, this was part of me doing the conference, so yeah, nice to meet everyone.
Thanks, Pete. Martin?
Hi there, John. My name's Martin Hoxie. So as you said at the top of the show, I'm Chief Innovation, Community and Technology Officer, which means I get all the fun. I get to play with lots of bits of technology and bits and pieces of the association, looking at how we can connect and engage with our membership and get some of the voices out from the conference to the wider world.
Brilliant. And we had a wee chat before the start of the show, sort of the things we might roughly talk about. I hope we can touch on things that you're looking forward to in particular, maybe about the conference, but sort of bookending it with the activities that are happening before the conference and maybe thinking a wee bit about how conferences can go on and how you organise something like this sort of size, because as we said last week, it seemed like an amazing thing. There's a huge number of people speaking, lots going on, and last week you said there was 100 people involved in the organisation of this, I think, which is quite mind-blowing. To think that you've got to control and all that sort of input. So there's a few things happening before the conference, I think, and Pete, you were kind of keen to talk about one of those at least.
Yeah. So, I mean, we wanted, given that this is the first time that the old conference is coming to Liverpool, not just the University of Liverpool, but coming to Liverpool in general, we were really keen when we were kind of having some ideas around getting a conference here about what could we do to kind of make it stand out for the first time it was coming here. And we've had lots of great innovation going on at Liverpool in recent years, or certainly the 4 years that I've been. I was there as in the lecture in life sciences. And one of the great things that's come up recently is there's a really good initiative around programming called HiPi. And there's a link on the conference website to the pre-conference events on the Monday evening. And just to kind of give you the gist of it, it was born out of the School of Physical Sciences at Liverpool. And it was a kind of a recognition that students, undergrads, postgrads, and postdocs and whatever, were kind of going into kind of to jobs, but they didn't really have a handle on kind of programming and kind of learning how to code and that sort of thing. And they probably missed the whole kind of Michael Gove shift towards computing in kind of schools that happened a few years ago, and they've not been exposed to that. And coming from a computer science background myself, I often wondered why teaching life sciences, if students were kind of struggling with that, and it's almost a naive misunderstanding. So the Hive, or the HiPi, that's been set up was a kind of an open kind of learning environment, free for anyone to attend, any level of experience, complete novice right through to the seasoned experts, just to go along and just to kind of work together. And just to kind of looking around how you can improve your programming skills, working on projects, just getting a hand on it, but in a really informal environment. So it's not necessarily like going to class and having to write up homework and do lectures and submit assignments, but it's just supposed to be a little bit more informal. You can have a chat with people while you're doing it. They even have food, so there's free pizza and where have you. And they even allow you to choose your own song for the playlist that they're playing in the background, just to emphasise that kind of informal nature. So we wanted to take advantage of that, and we met with the HiPi organisers a couple of months ago, and we managed to coordinate the next Hive that they're running to run the same time as the conference. So that's the one that's running on the 4th of September, so it's the day before the conference starts. So we wanted, again, thinking about people who may be arriving early for the conference, to give them an opportunity to engage with participants and just something to do on the Monday evening, just ahead of it. So the one on the Monday is called Robots and Code, and it's very much based around Python coding and using Arduinos. And so people can kind of come along and get involved in it. So we'll get a beginner's intro to Arduino and what it can do. And then they can have a go just working with some projects, because, I mean, Arduino kits cost a little bit of money, so people might not always have access to them. But you can come along here, and all you need is a laptop and make sure you can get access to the internet. And you can do it. The really good thing about it is that they have all of the projects that you can take away, and if you wanted to use them yourself or in your own teaching or kind of encouraging your own students wherever you are, then you've got that opportunity to do so.
Certainly from the website, which is hipy.uk, it looks really, really interesting, and I like the absolute beginner's intro to Python and coding. So I guess if you can navigate a laptop and use the internet and type a little, this would be suitable for you.
Exactly.
And we've got a sort of relaxed vibe about the whole thing. So I guess it'll be chatty and no real pressure, which is quite a nice way, I think, to learn these sorts of things, because it can be a bit off-putting if you're thrown into the middle of a big bunch of code that looks very complicated.
Exactly, and having gone through that pain of teaching it myself a number of years ago, and seeing the look of anguish on people's faces when you give them code to work through, there's nothing worse. it's a great event. The only thing, obviously, that we ask is people just sign up, just so we get an idea of how many are going to be there, so we know how much pizza to order, and also to make sure that they have the beekeepers. So the beekeepers are the kind of the people that are running the sessions, to make sure we've got enough there, so that if people do need support or just want to have a chat about the issues, then they've got that opportunity to do so.
Right. And when people who go into all, who generally, I believe, who come from, you know, education of some level, probably mostly higher education, is this something they could be taking back as a a skill to their institution, or do you think it's something that's a more for personal interest?
I would certainly hope so, that people might be able to take that back, because I mean, for me, from a kind of a selfish perspective, if programming is not just about writing code, it helps people to think through problems logically, and for me, that's one of the skills that I wasn't necessarily seeing in teaching with undergraduate students, is that they often struggle to think about kind of problems logically, particularly as I was teaching math. So, as I say, the writing the program is not just being able to sit at the keyboard and write this kind of alien language. It's about how you think through problems, and there's lots of different ways in which you can apply that to other situations as well. It can obviously go across multiple subjects. So yeah, I would definitely be saying that this is not something that this is just limited for a pre-event for the alt conference, and I would certainly be encouraging, I'm sure the Hi-Fi team will be encouraging people, if they want to take it back and use it with their own students, then by all means do so.
Brilliant, thanks very much, Pete. I don't know, is anybody else, other than just running about and working really hard, Martin and Marin, in preparation for the conference, is there anything that's happening before that you're particularly interested or excited about?
Well, I think we've had a number of media partners, including yourself, come on board. So, you know, we've had podcasts from... well, Maren will know. She did the podcast.
The EdTech podcast, yeah.
The EdTech podcast. So, and there's going to be, with LTHE chat, there's going to be tweet chat. So I think it's nice to see a range of different medium being used to try and, you know, engage people with the conference before it happens. It's the conference is quite a major event on people's calendar, and I think it's important to try and keep that kind of communication, and there's a lot of sharing that goes on at the conference just by its very nature, and it's trying to extend that beyond the conference as well.
I agree. I think there is a lot going on, and two of the things that I wanted to highlight is that we've, on our conference website, we've got quite a lot of guest posts coming out now, where participants from previous years shared their perspective on the conference. So we had James Clay, a big shout out to him, write a guest post on how to get the most out of the conference if you're going for the first time. When we've also had Alistair Clark writing about empowerment and video for learners, in his case, adult learners. And I think it's nice to see the variety of voices coming through from different sectors. So I think that's one of the ways in which you can kind of get a flavor for what's going on within the conference in the run-up, whether you're attending or not. But one of the other things, John, that we mentioned last week that I wanted to mention again is that we said Community Choice Award voting is open for ALTS Learning Technologist of the Year Awards. And I've actually had a look, and we've had over 400 votes coming in already. And there is a lot more voting yet to be done. It's going to be open for one more week, so you've got only one more week to go before voting closes and the winners will be announced. So I think that's one of the other ways in which I think you can get involved. So watch the videos of all the finalists and then pick your favorite.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, I really like this idea, because there'll be a lot of people who are interested in learning technology and don't necessarily get the opportunity to travel to these things every year, but you're pulling them in before, during, and after the conference as well, I guess, which is nice. Martin, I don't know if you want to talk a wee bit about the broadcasting that's going on, because I was saying last week when I looked at the programme, I was amazed at the number of things in there. They've got a wee YouTube icon beside them.
Yeah, so this is something that we started doing a couple of years ago, largely thanks to Darren Moon from the LSE. So he's a very active ALT member, and he also contributes to a number of areas of what we do. And so he basically, we were setting up for a conference, and he was saying he's a YouTube expert at his own institution, and he was saying, look, this is how you can do it. And at the time I didn't realize how easy it is to you know, if you've got a camera and a laptop, you can basically live stream stuff straight out to YouTube. So having started doing this a couple of years ago, we've kind of built up a small cupboard of equipment, and so we've been doing this for a couple of years now, and it's evolved as well. So over that time, we've tried different bits of software. So the latest bit of software we're using, which we use at OER17, is Open Broadcast Studio. So it's nice for the association, which has openness as one of its core values, that we're using open source software to actually support what we're doing as part of the live streaming. Basically, there is quite a bit of kind of pre-preparation going in, just to make sure we can get decent audio. John, I know you appreciate how difficult it can be sometimes to get decent audio out of venues, and so that seems to be the first question we always ask. And as long as we can get a decent audio in a steady camera position, I think people at home value being able to tune in and watch a good proportion of the conference. And one of the great things about YouTube as well is, as well as providing a facility to live stream, is it's all the recordings are immediately available, so a bit like on-demand TV. So if you did miss the start of a session, you can even go back to the beginning halfway through, or, you know, days later. So we've built up a great kind of archive of conference material now, and it's worth looking at the old YouTube channel and having a look at some stuff there. I remember recently looking at some keynote presentations from people like Dylan William. There's I think perhaps one of the most controversial alt keynotes from Donald Clark. There's great stuff from people like Audrey Waters and Catherine Cronin, so and also Leah Commissioner, was debunking some myths that seem to be common within our sector, such as learning styles. So there's great stuff there.
Well, as you say, good audio quality. I look forward to ripping these videos to audio and listening to them as I commute. I hope you do think, you know, of audio, because I think it's flexible and it's listening. It's not always great if you can't see a diagram, but listening to voices. But certainly YouTube is very easy now to pull in the audio. And I believe as well that they now transcribe videos automatically.
It can be a bit hit and miss. YouTube and Google, who are obviously who own them, have put a lot of work into this. So it seems, I think we're quite fortunate that you know, it's not just able to detect American accents. It can even largely decode some of the things I'm trying to say on some of these videos. So it's not 100%, but you get generally the gist of what has been said within the captions.
I mean, I think just the various formats, and this is maybe a topic that's going on in the conference, because there are people talking about video recording lecturers and all sorts of other things, but having multiple versions in different media, we thought was quite a useful thing. I know you've just debunked learning styles, and I totally agree, but sometimes reading is quicker, or listening is, you can wash the dishes at the same time.
One of the I mentioned Donald Clark's keynote. So one, I think that was from 2009, and one of the things we did for that was, we actually, there's a huge Twitter user base at the old annual conferences, and we took the tweets that were being said as Donald was giving his presentation and actually turn those into subtitles. So you can actually see, you can replay Donald's keynote and see what was said in the back channel, the Twitter back channel, as subtitles on the video. So that's worth checking out just to see what the mood of the audience was. It's quite interesting. I think we did it for all the keynotes that year. It was interesting as well that those videos seemed to be watched more, and I think it was just that the Google search was able to find terms within the videos and pull it up the search rankings in that way.
That's fascinating. Did you have a tool to do that?
I had a homegrown tool that has sadly wilted away. It was called iTitle. So I started doing this with BBC iPlayer, and I was able to, because, you know, quite often now shows have some sort of hashtag. So it started off with the iPlayer, and it moved on to YouTube and Vimeo. But one of the issues of getting stuff out of Twitter is Twitter limits the time you have to get it. So the tool that was used that powered this was bought by Hootsuite and disappeared. It's something I would like to revisit again, because it was quite a fun idea. And I think given the amount of Twitter usage that we do have at the conference, I think it'd be interesting to see how we can get more value out of that as well.
Yeah, I think there's all sorts of interesting things going on there from a conference point of view, is giving the audience more of a shout. I don't know how
to speak. I think it also depends a bit on the keynotes.
Yeah.
Sorry, John, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just going to say, I think it depends a lot on the keynotes and how comfortable they are with engaging with that conversation. Mm. So I think this year, our opening keynote, Bon Stewart, you know, her home is on social media. And so, you know, I think if you're fortunate enough to have such a engaged lineup of speakers, then it's easy to engage the audience. I think Pete and Helen were really keen this year to try and, you know, help encourage our keynotes to engage a bit more in conversation with our participants, mm-hmm. rather than just focusing on that 1 hour of sort of, you know, talking. And we also have a Q&A element where you can pose questions both on Twitter and live in the audience. So hopefully there'll be quite a lot of opportunity to kind of engage. But one thing I was going to say is that what really I look forward to is seeing all the people putting their pens to paper, particularly one of our in our community, Brian Mathis, who's done a lot of the drawings for ALT in recent years. And I'm always curious to see all the drawings and the artwork coming out of the conference, which is something that I like, the visual aspect.
I just want to add on that, Maren. I remember seeing him last year in the final session with Dave White and Donald Lanklas, and I thought, yeah, this is exactly why I wanted to Liverpool, because I wanted to see what he would come up with for Liverpool, because there's some really good stuff that he was doing. I just thought, wow, that was such a brilliant way to kind of bring together the ideas that people are talking about. And I was selfishly thinking, I wonder if he could do that for one of my presentations, because I just don't think that way. And obviously I know a lot of people connect with that sort of stuff rather than it's written down. So yeah, that for me was great, seeing that last year and having that opportunity again for this year. And just as you were saying about the Twitter and getting people involved, it's that for those people who are watching online, we really want to make them feel like that they can feel like they're involved, and about giving them that opportunity that if they want to ask the questions, then there's going to be that tool or that kind of space for them to do so, that they can kind of bring them together and so they actually do feel like they're there.
Mm. So multimedia, I guess, if you've got drawing, you've got audio, you've got tweets, all sorts of stuff flying about the conference. I keep sort of dodging around the hard work bit and how you organise this, and I guess that's, Maren, is that you more than anybody else at the centre of this?
I wish I could say yes, because I'd love to take the credit. So absolutely, it's all down to me. Yeah. I work 24 hours a day for every day of the year. No, I think, you know, I probably am the person who has the most oversight because that's my job and you know, that's what I manage. But I think the real power of bringing this conference together is really everybody who is involved in it. And I think last time when we mentioned the committee and Pete and Helen and all the participants and how few of us there are staff-wise and all the involvement of trustees like Lorna and Sheila, whom we had on the show last week, I think it's really a process of everyone contributing a small amount of their time and their energy and their passion to make it pull together. And I think that's really remarkable. And probably what we do most as a staff team is provide a structure and to provide kind of the spreadsheet of planning that we need to kind of go along with it. And Martin contributes to that in a big way. But I think, you know, it's really volunteer effort. It's a member-led effort. And so in some ways, we never quite know what the conference will look like until it actually happens because, you know, it's all individuals who make the voices.
Brilliant. And I don't know, because this idea, I've still got this idea of 100 people in my top of my head, and organising that, is it a particular tool you use to do that, or is it just a sort of huge email list?
Fundamentally, it's a huge email list, but a lot of the, one of the big tasks we have is, you know, we've got just over 200 sessions, which means we had over 200 submissions for sessions. We actually have another open source tool called Open Conference System, which allows you to do the management of that. So you can assign reviewers, get review backs, and talk to authors. So that's probably one of the key management tools that we have. But we also have lots of spreadsheets, which for people that know me,
everyone
is probably
spreadsheet Martin.
Not a surprise at all.
Just on that, I mean, I'd also say as well is that as we've gone through and getting ready for the conference, we've obviously used things like this online chats where we've kind of been going through and giving people kind of running mini sessions on kind of how to submit a presentation, how to submit a proposal, kind of the top tips and that sort of thing. And then also kind of ahead of time, giving kind of working with kind of session chairs and giving them an outline of the sort of things that they might do or what people might engage with in the sessions. And then at Liverpool as well, we've had the good old face-to-face meetings as well with our kind of local organising committee, which I do need to give a really big thanks to, that they've given up just as much time as we have as well, as me and Helen. And I know, Pete, when people look and they say, oh, the conference co-chairs, and a lot of people think it's just these two people, it's really not. Maren and Martin and the alt team really are the glue to make this work. We just get the glory at the end, I suppose, me and Helen, to be the kind of the faces of it. But there is, I mean, we've had a team of at least kind of, I don't know, maybe 12 to 15 at Liverpool just kind of working on kind of coming up with ideas because, again, whilst we were really privileged and honoured to be the co-chairs, is that we didn't want to just kind of think this is our kind of conference, our spin, and we wanted to kind of get the ideas of people who are working in EdTech about what sort of things they wanted to have seen at conference. So we didn't just look within Liverpool, we looked at kind of the local area. So we've had people from further education colleges, we've had people from other institutions, from Edge Hill and the likes, to come together because it's in the Northwest, so it's not just Liverpool. There's other institutions and people who might want to get involved. And we wanted to open it up to as many as people as possible. And that's, again, where the programme committee comes in as well, and all the people involved in the review. And there was just, yeah, lots of systems to engage with and lots of kind of methods of communication to manage them. But I think it's gone pretty well. Mara might say otherwise. She's probably dealt with more than I have. But from a whole, from a culture, the way that Maren has made things tick has been absolutely fantastic. And a plug for anyone thinking of co-chairing a conference, definitely think about the old conference and ideas around that, because it's a fantastic thing to do. Ahead of time, I'm saying that. I've not actually done the conference yet.
Ask you again, Pete, in a week's time.
Yeah.
Hopefully the endorsement will be just as glowing. But I think one of the things, John, that I wanted to mention was that we've worked really hard over the last 5 years to get all of ALT's infrastructure to run on our own kind of open source and independent services as much as possible. We used to use a lot more third-party closed systems and subscription-based systems. And whenever they changed, our workflows had to change, and it was a huge amount of effort to update things. And, you know, we were really dependent on what was on offer. So I think one of the things that Martin's led on and that I really feel passionate about as a membership body is that we really have built a much more open approach to hosting our own content online and getting a much better user experience for our members, so that, you know, we own and we can dictate how the platform is used. So I think we can give much clearer terms of participation. We can be much clearer about what the data, where it goes, where it sits, what we do with it, what, how we adhere to our privacy policy. Things that, you know, maybe make a small difference when you register for an event and you take a box, but makes a huge difference when you get, you know, unwanted emails 3 years later. So I think that's one of the things that we've worked really hard on, to make sure that our infrastructure really reflects our values and how we want to serve our membership.
That's a lovely idea, and obviously the idea of openness sort of woven through the conference from your first keynote onwards, and it pops up. And I think we mentioned last week that I guess is becoming more of a, well, Bond Stewart's talking about the new norm, being open, being more normal. But I hadn't thought of the advantages for an organisation like yourself in being open, as in having more control or fine control of what goes on, rather than just using a service or a silo that you don't have control of and you don't, you know when it's going to update or change their complete business plan. That's fascinating, because I'm interested in that from a personal point of view, as well as from an educational one. I don't know how long I'm going to run. I usually mumble something about half an hour, and we've obviously hit that. But I wonder if you've got maybe just one or two, maybe even of the more unusual speaks, talks, or things that anybody would like to point out or suggest, as opposed to the big hitters and the keynotes.
I think for me, I mean, I would, one of the reasons why I like to be a co-chair is that you do have some input on who the keynotes are, and that was, for me, was a big thing, because the Peter Goodyear talk is the one that I'm really looking forward to on the Thursday for a number of reasons. That it's always been popping up in my kind of research that I'm doing, and the perspective I come, rather than the learning technologist practitioner, I'm coming from a kind of a mix between the two, as a learning technologist and a researcher. But for the experience we'd had at Liverpool, and again, it was probably purely a selfish perspective, but I know we're not the only ones that at the time that were suffering from this issue of around learning spaces. But I mean, for the likes of Liverpool, and when people come, it's a city centre campus, and space is an absolute premium. So it was having that opportunity to think about the actual learning space, and whether it's a physical one where you're really struggling. And whilst we've got some great examples on campus, the central teaching laboratories, for those who are coming to the campus, definitely recommend going and have a look at a really good example of a physical space of kind of reworking. But for us, it was kind of, well, how do we explore outside of that, where you don't have a massive lecture theatre to sit 600 students? How do you kind of make those students feel like they're all involved as part of the learning? So I know you wanted me to stay away from the big hitter, John, but that to me is the one that I and a lot of colleagues, and I imagine a lot of people from around the world, are really looking forward to, is having that chance to hear Peter speak. And we've managed to secure him to get him from a long way away, obviously from Australia, to come over. So that for me is one of the big hits.
Certainly, it seems, and I'm just going from a primary school perspective, that there's a lot of interest or a lot of action coming from Australia on that sort of, you know, classroom design, learning space, you know, what sort of equipment and seats we give children and things like that. So that looks really fascinating. And also, I'm just, as I'm reading over his session, we're talking about this idea of material, digital, hybrid spaces. And do you think that's a sort of feature of the conference, is that the blending of sort of different realms? I mean open and closed and physical and online and all the rest of it. And do you think this is some sort of, we're settling into the digital realm as being more normal, and it can sort of blend in nicely with the other realms?
I'm sure Martin and Maren have got something to say. I think for me, it comes back to our conference title, and we did think quite long and hard about this. And I know there was some early conversations around the term we're using is norm. And for us, the reason behind the title is that we'd often seen that people are doing really good things wherever they are in the world, and regardless of sex as well, there's lots of good stuff going on in primary schools, secondary schools, and colleges and institutions. And we'd seen firsthand at Liverpool how that often struggles to kind of replicate up and go across the institution. And I completely agree. This idea of digital is that is the way it seems to be going, and it's almost, we're not necessarily saying we're there yet, but it's definitely going that way, and giving people that opportunity to come together and see and how it's working across all the different sectors, so that they can take that on board, is definitely what we're looking forward to.
Brilliant. Anyone else got an interesting or off the wall or unusual session that they're looking forward to?
I think one of the nice things about the conference is people really get creative with the session titles. They realise with so much going on that you've got to find something catchy that will draw your audience in. For example, the fleshy interface from techno nerd to uber norm, which is going to be one of our live stream events, completely intrigues me, and I'm glad it's been scheduled in the main hall as part of the live streaming, because I'm looking forward to that. And there are a number of other ones. I think there must be a behind the scenes competition for the most outrageous session title people can get away with.
Yeah, I mean, I just looking down, and there's so many things. I think, well, there's something interesting there, and there's something intriguing, and there's something I just don't understand. So I'd like to understand it from that point of view, you know. So I hadn't seen the fleshy one.
Well, I think for me, there is loads of sessions that I'd love to go and see, including someone unbundling the university, which sounds fascinating, and also on a new national open textbook initiative that I'm really interested in. But I think, you know, we can't pick favourites, but there is one strand of the conference that I think I'm personally really passionate about, and that's about empowerment in learning technology. And Francis Bell is giving a really interesting presentation on the Thursday, which is about the literacies of resisting the new normal. And that's really questioning our sort of ethical implications of adopting learning technology, and looks at questioning equity we have and equality. Francis is involved in a new sort of movement or initiative called Femme EdTech. So I think looking at equality and the stake we have different groups have in learning technology. And I think that's one of the strands of the conference that I'm really passionate about, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the conversation about.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. No, I've read one or two things that Francis has written in her blog occasionally, so I'm suspecting that will be a very nice session. And I was lucky enough, I met her briefly at the OER17, so I'd be interested to hear more about that. Maybe a future guest. And as I said, we're kind of getting near the end, but the conference, and one of the things that I'm going to steal Martin's thunder here, one of the things I thought was really interesting is the way that you have truncated the hashtag.
Yeah, this is, I think, I can't remember which year we decided to do this, but it's about, again, trying to continue the conversation. And, you know, as I mentioned, we have a lot of Twitter users at the conference and who, you know, watch remotely as well. And just as a mechanism to try and get the conversation going beyond, you know, the conference, couple of days beyond the year of the conference, we dropped the year from it. So instead of things like Alt-C 2009 or Alt-C 17, as I can see Graham Steele has tweeted, we don't bother with numbers, Graham. It's just hash Alt-C And that way we use it around the year. And it was something that really was brought home by a session that we did at the Alt Scotland Special Interest Group, where I think it was the Digital Pixies, our collective of physics teachers. Again, they just have a hashtag, a bit like how you have EduTalk, and it's, you know, it's trying to build up a community around something. So, you know, I think last year we topped over 15,000 tweets over the conference.
Wow.
Week. We're going to see if we can beat that next week. So, Pete, get your fingers out. Hopefully, John, you can join in as well.
I'm hoping, Martin, you're actually going to read every single one. Or maybe turn it into an automatic YouTube stream video.
I am so sure there's a clever spreadsheet that will archive all of our tweets.
I mean, that's one of the things that maybe not mentioned, but just from the titles, from, you know, fleshy things going on and titles and some of the titles of the talks and this, you know, comfortable feeling of humour around the conference. I don't know if you've tried to design that in or it's just happened serendipitously, but it seems like part of it is a friendly, relaxed attitude.
Yeah, it was mentioned last week that, I mean, for me, if you've not presented at a conference before and you're looking about for ways to kind of showcase what you're doing, then Alt is one of the best places to go because it is so friendly. I mean, just picking up on the titles, there's one, I'm just check what date on the Wednesday afternoon, called Kevin Costner is a Liar. it is that sort of notion that, I mean, it almost seems like a battle because there's that many sessions, there's 8 parallel sessions going on, mm-hmm. over 200 talks, and how are you going to get the people to come along to your session, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, I mean, that's what it's encouraging. It is very friendly. It is very, not completely informal, obviously, it's running a conference. It is that friendly atmosphere that I really love about it. And having attended both personally and kind of virtually as well in the past, there's nothing like being there if you're able to do that. But, yeah, it's about being able to put your own spin and, after all, people are there to kind of listen to what you're talking about. I mean, they want to learn from what you've done. They want to learn about the challenges that you've had. They want to learn more about the mistakes you've maybe made so they don't have to make them themselves. And that's the way I've always seen it, is that it might not be the most interesting topic that I'm talking about. Maybe the ones I'm talking about aren't, but I'm pretty sure somebody's going to listen. If I can save somebody 2-3 days of hassle of going around doing something and they come and listen to it, then I consider that a fantastic presentation if I kind of save someone to that. So I kind of see it as that way of helping others in whatever way I can.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a fantastic elevator pitch for the conference, you know, helping other people in any way you can. And we've certainly helped Graeme Steele, who's just repeated, fixed his hashtag. So, well, thanks, Graeme, and good evening. So, is there anything else anybody wants to add or discuss or bring up at the moment?
I'm not sure I can put it any better than Pete has. It is really about, you know, making it useful and connecting people. So I think that's a lovely sentiment to end on.
Good. Right. Okay. Martin?
Sorry, I'm just staring at the cat. I'm transfixed.
Yeah.
Just to paint the picture to your listeners, part of my job is monitoring what is happening on social media. So I'm surrounded by screens, and on 2 screens now across a couple of tweet deck columns, I've got a lovely little cat.
Every conference should have a worried-looking cat. I'm not saying it's worried to me. It's always, yeah, we're all transfixed in the GIF.
Well, John, I can say my cat's been joining us each evening and sitting right on the desk next to me, so you have at least one very avid feline listener here.
Yes, sir, yes. What the internet could do with more of is more cats that listen to podcasts. So on that note, can I just say a huge thanks, because obviously this is a busy time for you. You've got lots of things to do. Just taking your time out to talk to me tonight, it's been a delight. Really enjoyed it. Would love to visit the conference, obviously, but it sounds like we'll be able to see quite a lot of it from afar. So Pete, Marin and Martin, can I just say thank you very much for coming along.
Thank you, John.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll just hang up the broadcast now. We'll say goodnight, folks. Hopefully the podcast will be up online in a couple of days. And goodnight. Cheers, folks.